This interview by Radio EcoShock is with Dr. Andrew Weaver of the Earth Sciences of University of Victoria, done in February 2007. He is the lead author of the Predictions of the Future for the IPCC report, released in Paris in February 2007. Dr. Weaver, the IPCC has released its report in Paris. What was your role in that process?
I was a lead author of one of the 11 chapters. It was a chapter on called Global Climate Projections. It's the chapter that was assessing what will happen in the future. So it's the future predictions chapter.
Well, this is one of the optimistic things about this process, I think, is that humans are really starting to look 50 or 100 years into the future.
Well, I think, yeah, we've been, this is now the fourth assessment report. It's the first one was in 1990, 1996, 2001, and now 2007. And so all along, people have been making the projections out to the future. We've now got 20 years of data since the first such projections were made, and they were pretty much bang on. If anything, the data has showed the upper end of what things have been projected as opposed to the kind of central value.
And the public's supposed to get a basic understanding of this. We have to vote for big spending projects and make difficult personal decisions. Are we asking too much when we get research scientists like yourself to be public teachers as well?
That's a very good question. And, you know, I think the key aspect here of what the public discourse should be now is about how do we deal with this. I think if people, it's a very complicated question because as a scientist, I'm ultimately funded by the taxpayer. I mean, my research grant money comes from governments, sometimes from industry, but it's largely funded by the taxpayer. So we have a duty and a responsibility and an ethical obligation when asked to respond and report upon the research that we do. So I think that that's part of our job, to be informing the public when the public cares about what we do. I mean, we as scientists typically don't call press releases. We typically respond to when people call us. But I think we have an obligation. So it is a heavy task on us, but I think it's a very important task. And I think that any policy that needs to be made in the context of sound science. And I think that's what the IPCC offers the world. It offers it a very, very comprehensive, thorough analysis of our understanding of climate science.
Well, moving to a northern perspective, President Putin has said global warming may be good for Russia, and we Canadians are going to like warmer winters. Why should we worry about it?
That's another question that comes up quite often, is that global warming, first of all, does not mean that everywhere in the world warms the same amount. Now, if I was self-serving and I was living in northern Siberia, I might see the Arctic opening in the summer as a possibility for me to build a shipping factory so that I can get methane natural gas, which is now being produced from my enhanced wetlands in the north, coming and piping that into somewhere. So maybe I could find some opportunity. And there will be opportunities. There, of course, are other issues involved. Now, the other issues are, and the big issue in terms of climate change and global warming, in my opinion, is not so much for the Canadian perspective or even the Northern Russian perspective. It's perspective about and the needs for adaptation and the ability to adapt of those parts in the world that don't have the economic wherewithal to adapt. For example, let's suppose we're on target for, say, a 28 to 58 centimeter rise in sea level this century. That's a conservative estimate. The error on the low side is very low. The error on the high side is much higher. So let's suppose you have a half-meter sea level rise this century. Let's suppose, as it will be, it'll be 6 to 7 meters several hundred years from now if we pass more than 2.5 degrees warming, at which point Greenland ice sheet has to melt away. Well, this poses a really big problem, not necessarily for Vancouver or Victoria, but for Western Europe, much of which will be underwater, for Bangladesh, which will be underwater. Therein you start to see the problems. It's not so much what happens to tomorrow, it's what happens in decades to come. And there are some quite dramatic changes in store that we need to get a handle on sooner than later. That is not the least of which is that example I just gave. Other examples include, you know, we see people getting very upset that a few trees fall down in Stanley Park, and rightly so. It's, you know, a beautiful natural environment. But, you know, we're on target so that those trees that we've replanted won't actually be able to grow there because the climate is changing on a time scale that it has not changed ever since the last 10,000 years. So these are dramatic changes. The rate of change is very fast, and the ability to adapt is difficult accordingly because the rate of change is so fast.
Well, isn't that one thing that we have to shoot for, is if we can't actually stop global warming, if we could slow it down, some of the animals and plants would have a time to adapt to it?
Well, it's a good question you raise, or point you raise there. There's two aspects to global warming, And there's one of which is absolutely necessary, is adaptation. There is no question. Even if today we all of a sudden turned off our emissions basically everywhere in the world, we would have half a degree of warming in store, and we'd probably have a 25 centimeters, or maybe even more sea level rise. So we got that anyway. It's called the commitment, the warming commitment. But what we are doing today affects decades and centuries to come. So the real questions are, what do we as society, and that society is not we in Vancouver or Victoria or Calgary, but we in on this planet, because there is only one, what do we deem to be an acceptable level of climate change? And once we set that target, we have to develop the paths and technology so we don't go past it. And that is where mitigation comes in, because we need to be able to have mitigation strategies to stop it. Because there is things that, as I say, this 2.5 degree threshold, 2.5 to 3 degree, is on target to happen this century. It's not far-fetched, and that's 6 meter, 7 meter, no matter what, sea level rise. That's unacceptable. So Europe, for example, has set a target of 2 degrees. They do not think it is acceptable for the planet to warm by more than 2 degrees.
Well, there's a lot of talk about tipping points, too, yes. And I understand Canada's tundra could be one of them. How could our frozen north jeopardize the climate?
That's another great example of an unknown in the climate system. It's what it is the north right now has got vast amounts of permafrost, and on top of the permafrost is a small layer that's called the active layer that thaws every summer and then refreezes in the winter. As that deepens, you start to expose more and more stored organic material that's basically frozen in place, to oxygen if there's no water on top, which then allows it to decompose. And when it decomposes, it gives carbon dioxide. If there's wetlands on top of it, when you thaw it, you actually do it in an environment that's depleted in oxygen, so you get the production of methane instead. So depending on whether you get enhanced methane or carbon production, you add an amplification or a positive feedback to warming. And so this is something that we know there's carbon in reservoirs in the north. We know they're frozen. We know they'll be released as it melts. We don't know the ratio of methane to carbon dioxide. We hope it's carbon dioxide and not methane, because there are examples in Earth's history when massive methane pulses were released, and they were not very good to the species that were present at the time. So these are the kind of things we have to try to understand more of. That is known as a tipping point. We don't want to pass a threshold where you get a runaway greenhouse effect.
Is there some good news coming out of the last 5 years of research?
Absolutely. In fact, one of the sections I wrote in the report was on the role of the ocean in climate, and in particular, it was the assessing the likelihood of the collapse or the cessation of the North Atlantic overturning. This is the conveyor, the Gulf Stream, the source of the movie The Day After Tomorrow. Now, In the previous assessment in 2001, there was a statement in there that saying it was too early to assess the likelihood of an abrupt tipping point or abrupt change in that or shutdown. We can now say it's very unlikely that that'll occur this century, that you will not get essentially a shutting down of the conveyor belt this century. So there's some good news.
Especially for people in Europe.
Exactly.
You know, I've listened to a lot of interviews with scientists, and usually somewhere near the end, almost under their breath, they give a hint of a much deeper worry than their institution might approve. Is this IPCC summary report giving us, will it give us the real picture, or is it dumbed down to fit the consensus model?
You nailed it right on the head. In fact, on Friday, there was a paper released, and that paper was released by a fellow called Stefan Ramstorff and with colleagues. And what he's done is he's actually looked historically at the assessments of the IPCC and the projections they've made since 1990. And what you find, as is not to be expected, as is to be expected, I guess, in retrospect, is that we've now got 20 years of data since the first projections. What has happened is the projections have been very conservative. And the actual real world has been on the upper end, right at the upper end of all the projections. And you're going to see that again. These are scientists, by their very nature, are conservative in terms of their thinking. They're skeptical. By their very nature, a scientist, by definition, is skeptical. That's what makes you inquisitive, what makes you ask questions. So they're cautious, they're skeptical, they're conservative. They don't want to make statements that they can't support, because if they do, you know, the world comes tumbling about down upon them. So the document you'll see, or you've seen, is very, very conservative. So. And what we can say, though, and that is touched upon in the document, is that we have a great deal of confidence in the lower bound of warming. We have very little. We have less confidence in the upper bound. And so that is a statement in itself, because.
So worse things could happen, but we're not sure.
Yes.
All right. Is there anything else you'd like to tell us before you go?
I find it, as a scientist working in the area, I find it very refreshing that, in fact, we're seeing every party in the country actually fighting to try to be the person who's going to do the most. I want to see something get done. Nobody's doing anything. They're all talking about it. But at least we're now having all parties singing from the same song sheet. This is a good thing, and I hope that we actually get progressive change. And I think people need to realize that climate change and the science of it is not a political issue. It's not a conservative or a liberal or an NDP or a green issue. It's an issue about basic science, and it's an issue about what we as society have to do in response to the findings of basic science. If we have an outbreak of a virus, what do? We take methods to try to limit it and to try to curb it and develop vaccines, etc. It's the same thing with climate science.
Dr. Weaver, you're busy and only going to get busier. Thanks so much for all your work and for talking with us today.
Thank you very much for having me on your show.
This is EcoShock Radio. All environment, all the time. Get more info on the web at ecoshock.org.